And I'm going to introduce our speaker tonight. I don't know when I met Cindy in here. It's kind of interesting because I wound up meeting her, and then we have a little connection in the past. She actually went to school where my husband went to school in Vero, and it's, you know, it's a small world. But she's someone that I actually watch and admire in the rooms because I know she works this program. Because I've seen her do a lot of 12-step work. I've gotten phone calls from her. Hey, can you come with me or tomorrow to help take someone to detox? Can you do this? Can you help me do this? I mean, she really does work this program. And I just admire her, and I admire what she does in this, in these rooms, and I would love to hear her story. So I'm going to introduce Cindy.
I'm Cindy, and I'm an alcoholic. And thanks, Liz, for asking me to. I'm supposed to do this. Asking me to speak. It really is an honor, you know, to speak at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's also scary. So for the newcomer back there that said, "I'm here and I'm nervous and I'm just going to take it all in," I was thinking, "I'm nervous too." but anyways. So I will tell you a little bit about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today. And I should say that I love Alcoholics Anonymous, that it's not supposed to cry so dang soon. You know, it's given me a life second to none, beyond my wildest dreams. And, you know, and I should be dead, and I'm not. And I should say that my sobriety date's February 27th, 1983. And I got sober when I was just barely 20 by the grace of God. And, you know, and if I say God, you know, go with higher power, whatever works for you. I didn't like the word God when I came in here. I don't know why. I didn't go to some scary hellfire brimstone church or anything. I just, it kind of gave me a little funny feeling, but I'm comfortable with that word today, and it's a higher power of my understanding. But, anyways, I guess I'll begin. I grew up not too far from here, and my folks were, you know, I'm a lucky kid. I had two very good parents and three good siblings. And mom was very, straight-laced and very, you know, she was a good person, and she had to handle a lot because my dad had this disease, and he was a good guy, and he taught me how to play ball, and he taught me a lot of stuff, and he taught me how to, you know, be honest, or at least as honest I could, and that sort of thing. But he did have this disease, and she had to go through a lot raising four kids with that whole deal going on. But I know today that, you know, he got sober when I was about 16 or 17 through this thing called Alcoholics Anonymous. And that was my example. And I know that that's why I got sober so early. I got to see that Alcoholics Anonymous works. He was a good guy, but he had it, you know, at the end of his disease, he, like myself, should have died from this thing. But anyways, I started drinking probably about when I was 16, I think. I would have, in about the time he got sober, actually, and I would have been drinking before then, but I just did not like the taste of alcohol. I tried, and I also was, you know, that whole deal, not comfortable in your own skin. I can remember going to elementary school, or not elementary, but junior high, like seventh grade, and I could tell you exactly what I wore the first day of school in seventh grade, because it was just, you know, you went from sixth grade to a new school, to junior high school. And I think I was kind of comfortable in my skin in elementary school. I could play good sports and all that stuff. But somewhere around that whole 13, 14 thing, got uncomfortable in my own skin. And I remember the little, like, Royal Blue corduroys and a little shirt and these brown shoes, and I don't think I was like the most stylish gal in town. And, but it was just that uncomfortable thing. And so the kids I was hanging out with, because I was hanging out with the kids that kind of snuck out of the house and that sort of thing, because there was so much going on at my house that my responsible parents, it was just hard to be responsible when there's some craziness going on. So I could sneak out and do all those things. And so they were starting to drink around 14 or something, and I couldn't get it down my throat. It made me gag, but I really wanted to experience whatever it did. So somewhere around 16, I did something else between 14 and 16 that got me out there. But at 16, I was determined to drink, and I went with a good friend of mine, who's still a good friend today, Monique, who didn't have a problem with alcohol, but she did, you know, drink a little bit that time. And we went to the 7-Eleven, and at that time the drinking age was 18, and she looked old enough. And we went to the 7-Eleven and got Coke Slurpee, and across the street to the liquor store, and she got some Bacardi rum and put it in the Coke Slurpee, and I was finally able to get that stuff down my throat. And it was through a straw, and I didn't get what maybe she got. I don't know, because she stopped drinking whenever a normal person stops drinking. I didn't get some little tipsy, ooh, I feel kind of lightheaded, this is just where I want to stop kind of feeling. I just, you know, went on, and more Coke Slurpee, more Bacardi rum. And by the end of the night, she was driving my car. I blacked out. I don't remember much of the night. I flew up. I woke up hungover. And that's kind of how my drinking went. I didn't really drink socially. I drank strictly for the effect. And those blackouts were often, pretty much every time I drank. But I couldn't imagine going out. You know, we'd go to these keg parties or something in high school, and all these kids would be crowded around this keg, and I just could not talk to anybody. I could not, you know, have fun and just be comfortable until I got to that flipping keg and got that beer in that. And I didn't want to leave because it took so long to get to the front of that thing. I knew that I'd leave and I'd have this one beer which wouldn't quite do what it needed to do, and I'd have to get back in that line again. An example of the way I drank was, we used to go to Rosie O'Grady's for Nickel Beer Night, and that is really early on I got a fake ID. I did not want to have any complication with getting alcohol. So I very early on got a fake ID, so I'm this young kid that belongs to membership night at Rosie O'Grady's, you know. But at Nickel Beer Night, you'd get these plastic mugs, and you'd pay $1 deposit, get your plastic mug, and get it filled up for a nickel. At the end of the night, you take your mug back, you get your dollar back. But there was, you know, when the girl would fill up your beer for a nickel, then she'd run away and go off and do something else. And again, you got the problem where you've had your first beer, and for me, who has this thing called alcoholism, the craving is set in, and I need another and another and another, and I don't want the lag time. So I would go and get five mugs or something, pay my $5, and I would sit down and get for five, you know, for 20 cents or whatever, 25 cents, get that all filled up. And by the end of the night, I'd be a mess. Bad things, you know, the consequences of drinking too much started happening in the blackouts and all that, all those things. I can remember, probably 18, my senior year in high school, and we got a place at New Smyrna Beach. I was a little worker bee. I had a little lawn service, and I cut grass all over the neighborhood. And at one point, I had 30 lawns in the neighborhood. And my dad loaned me $2,000 to buy a car. He kind of, you know, that was another thing he did. He didn't kind of give us the fish. He gave us the fishing pole. And so he, you know, he loaned me a little money, and it was always at prime plus two. That would be the interest rate plus two. But, you know, we paid it back. And I had my little lawn service, my little mower. I'd push up into the back of the trunk of that old Cutlass and go all around. So I could afford getting a little place at the beach at New Smyrna. And, you know, and I can remember one of those nights, and I'm not alone in here, I know, where I woke up and, you know, done something with somebody. Couldn't tell you today exactly what I did, but I was kind of in disarray, not a lot of clothes on. Nobody forced themselves on me or anything, but it's just that waking up. It was horrible. It was so horrible. Not even, it was just crazy. And I can still remember today just driving down New Smyrna to the Beacon restaurant. I wasn't really hungry. I just wanted to get out of that place. And, some of my kids that I was hanging out with in school were there, and they were just like, oh. But I just went by myself. And so that sort of thing, I don't know if it happened this many times or this many times, but once is enough. And those are the kinds of things that happen. So I thought, I've got to learn how to drink and not end up in those situations. And basically, drink but don't get drunk. Drink and don't end up in a blackout. Drink and don't end up in somebody's house that you don't know who the flip it is. And so I would try these ways. And it talks about in our big book, thinking more about alcoholism, but, and it talks about we try drinking beer only. I tried that really early on, because early on I ended up in some mess at some liquor, some place, and I thought, it's the liquor. I got to move to beer. If I just drink beer, I won't end up with a problem. So I tried that. We tried the amount of drinks that we, the limiting the amount of drinks. I used to think it was the fourth beer. If I could stop after the fourth beer, then I'd be okay. But you guys know I couldn't stop. I would be falling down, slobbering drunk, begging the bartender to give me another beer because I'd done run out of money. And I tried, if I only take this much money into the bar. I mean, this is the insanity of normal people. Don't do this. They do not think of whack out, ways to not end up drunk. They just have a glass of beer and call it quits. I'd say, well, if I only take this much money into the bar, well, it's going to cost this much for the cover. It's going to cost this much for a beer. So I'll just pay the cover, have the beer, and then I won't end up in some horrible, dangerous, icky situation. But I would have that beer, and like it talks about in our book, that craving would set in, and I would need another. And I'd walk out of the bar to my car, get more money, go back in, just enough money to maybe get one more beer. Go back in, just crazy stuff. If I have a glass of water between each beer, I won't end up drunk. If I order a scotch and water, I can't stand the taste of scotch. This is what I did. And as you know, it didn't work. And the yucky things continue to happen. And I used to end up in places. I used to leave this one bar, and I would go down, this girl I was hanging out with, to South Orange Blossom Trail at like 19 years old. And it is not a pretty street today, and it was not pretty back then. And in my little Cutlass convertible, drunk as a skunk, mostly in a blackout, because I don't really remember much about that place, and it was a playhouse. It was a topless bar on South Orange Blossom Trail, because this girl I was hanging out with worked there. and it was the kind of place that literally they would not let a female in unescorted, because they assumed that you were a prostitute and you would take out their business. But they let me go in. And I would also, end up at something called a bottle club on Orange Blossom Trail. It's just, I don't even remember that place. All I remember vaguely is looking for empty leftover beers or something and drinking strangers' beers and every now and then having a cigarette in the bottom of it. That kind of stuff that happened. The end came pretty quick for me. And at somewhere around 20, maybe 19, I had a car accident. I ran into the back of somebody's car on getting onto the East West Expressway on my way to see my friend on South Orange Blossom Trail. And I used to do this thing. This is kind of stuff that normal people don't do. And when I would drink too much and have a problem, like run into the back of somebody's car, I would go home after it was done and I'd write this note, and I still have two of them. Why I saved them, I don't know, but I've got them. And one of them says, regarding that night that I ran to the back of this girl's car, it says, Cindy, don't drink for 3.5 weeks. You know, first it said, Cindy, wrecked car on East West Expressway or something. Tell Dad I was at Mr. C's because I didn't want him to know the bar I was really at, which I made up some bar. Don't drink for 3.5 weeks. Call girl and apologize, whoever's car I wrecked. Mow lawns. More money, which you don't have. And the thing is written sideways. I would put this note under my mattress. So when Dad, because I'm living at home, knock on the door, Cindy, where's your car, honey? You know, I could say, I'm going to get up in just a little while. And I'd reach under the mattress, and I'd read my note, and I'd be like, oh, my God, I wrecked the car. You know, and then the pieces would come back together. And I have a note from when the only two I have is that one where I wrecked the car then, and another one when I was about 16, and I was at some place called the Dutch Trader on Fairbanks Avenue, and I had the note that said, got nailed, which means got caught. Got caught in Best Way parking lot, you know. Heard Mom and Dad saying and something about another alcoholic in the family, you know. I had that wreck that time. And then not long after that, I ended up in a situation at like 6 in the morning where I kind of came to, and I was at that some house, and I'm supposed to be at my house because I'm living at home, and I kind of came to, and I vaguely remember where I'd been. But anyway, so I came to in disarray with not a lot of clothes on. Again, not sure how many times this happened, but once is enough. And just felt like dog poo-poo. Just, incomprehensible demoralization. And I'm also kind of got that shaken thing going on because you've been drinking all night and it's 6 in the flipping morning and you're not sure what you did. And I'm not far from my parents' house and my car is kind of noticeable. And just putting stuff on, thinking, oh my God, I got to get out of here. Do I go to my home? I'm going to go to Monique's house. That's what I'm going to do. And Monique was just one of those pals that was there all along, but she was not a drinker and doing the other things like I was doing. So we went in different directions, but she was just always there, kind of like my angel or whatever, just a good person. And I used to get to spend the night at her house when I was young, when Dad would drink so much, and we'd all go to the Orlando Motor Lodge because things got crazy at the house. And sometimes I'd get to spend the night with my friend Monique on a school night because things are crazy. And her mom knew what was going on at my folks' house and everything. So I go to Monique's house, bang on the window, and she's like, Cindy, you know, and pulls me in. And her mom was up, and she said, oh, Cindy, you smell like a brewery, because she had this Danish accent. I just felt icky, just gross. And I know today that Monique called my dad and said, Mr. S, I think Cindy's got a drinking problem. And all I know is I called my dad and said, hey, Dad, I had a couple beers last night, spent the night at Monique's house. You know, but Monique's dad was in the program at this time too with my dad. My dad picked me up. So he picked me up about 1, there at Monique's house. I guess he gave me time to sleep it off. And it all just worked out, cause, you know, it just worked out. So he took me to Popeye's Chicken. and he had a beginner's packet with him. And he sat me down. And I was, you catch them when they're low, get them when they're down the bottom. And I was pretty far down at the bottom. He didn't know what had transpired that night. But I just had a wreck a month before in the car, and then this thing happens. And he's in the program, and he's probably wondering, what do I do, you know. And I reckon he talked to his higher power. And he came with that beginner's packet, and he gave me the 20 questions, and he folded down the bottom part where it says, if you've answered one out of 20 questions yes to one of these, you might have a drinking problem. And if you've answered yes to 2, well, there's a pretty good chance. And if you've answered yes to 3, well, you're pretty darn sure going to be an alcoholic. And I remember, you know, before I looked at that bottom part, because he had it folded under, and I answered as honestly as I could, and I answered 8 out of the 20. And when I folded that bottom part down and I read that stuff, I remember thinking, I don't know who this Johns Hopkins guy is. But, you know, but this is not accurate. This is BS. And if this stuff is true, everybody in the whole wide world is an alcoholic. Because everybody has blackouts. Everybody has remorse after drinking. Everybody, you know, does all sorts of crazy stuff. But I was still kind of beat down, and so I, you know, that was it. And I took my beginner's packet, and then he took me to this lady's woman's house. She was 27, and I was 20. And her, well, anyway, she's just she was in the program. She had a couple of years of sobriety at the time, and he dropped me off. And she had this little garage apartment over in Maitland, and it was like, wow, she's got her own little place. Wow, she's got this cute little rabbit, this little blue rabbit. I was scared to have a small car because I knew I'd kill myself. Not to mention all you guys, because I should have spent time over there for killing somebody, and it never happened. I drove drunk all the time. So, anyways, this girl, he left me there to talk to her, and it's kind of like, you know, when Bob. You know, Bill Wilson met Bob and said, 15 minutes, that's all I'm going to give him. And he's there for like 5 or 6 hours or something. And I don't think I was there for 5 or 6 hours, but I was probably there for 2 or 3. And I told her this horrible thing that had happened that night. And she said, oh, yeah, I've done that. Oh, copy that.
Understood. Whoops. Technical difficulty.
All right. Okay. Thank you, sir. So, anyways, testing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Alpha, Bravo, Charlie, we're good. Okay. Anyways, so I could relate to her, and I told her this thing I had done, and she, oh yeah, I've done that. And, you know, and I told her about my drinking. Oh, and we just could connect. We could understand. I could identify with her. And at the end, she said, would you like to go to an AA meeting? I don't think I want to go to an AA meeting yet. No, thanks. But I was curious. And I kind of had a feeling, maybe someday. And I took that beginner's packet home, and I read it. And I read all that information, and I thought, you know, I am close. Someday I might need this thing, but I'm not ready yet. But the seed was planted, and 3 weeks later, I'd been out all night, and I went to a friend, Missy's house, banging on her door, let's go do something, it's 4 in the morning, let's go do something. She and her boyfriend come to the door and like, Cindy, go away. And, so I left, and I was heading home, and on the way home, and this is all kind of in a blackout, and I come to an oak tree over by Rollins, and it just kind of startled me, and all I could think is, I gotta get out of here. I gotta get out of here. Don't want any trouble. And, car still ran, took it to Missy's house, and talked to her for a little bit. And my plan at that point, I didn't tell Missy this, and my plan, most people at 19 or 20 don't sort of know, this is how I'm going to kill myself. If I'm going to kill myself, this is how I'm going to do it. But I had a plan that if I was going to kill myself, it was going to be driving my car over to New Smyrna Beach, and where I-4 kind of goes over St. John's River or whatever, and it used to be a metal thing this big, not a big concrete thing. And so my plan was to get back in that car and just call it quits. I was just done, didn't want to play the game anymore over it. And I got back in that car that had gotten me just fine from the tree to Missy's house, and it just went quick. And Missy took me home, And by the way, my friend Missy is now a friend of Bill's and has been for a while. But, and I woke up that morning and I went through my little file and I found that beginner's packet and I found this girl's phone number on the back of it. And I called her up and I said, I'm ready to go to one of those meetings. And, she took me to a meeting in Winter Park and I walked in there and, I felt at home. I felt like I belonged. I felt like even though everybody else was older than me in there, I can't remember what everybody said. I just remember the love, this unconditional love in that room. And I remember, the only thing I remember specifically said was a guy across the room that said, I didn't always get into trouble when I'd been drinking, but when I got into trouble, I'd been drinking. And I could identify with that. And this other lady, when I left, you know, and I know who this, Eleanor, she's still with us, little two-handed handshake, you keep coming back, honey. And then this girl that had brought me to the meeting, when she dropped me off at my folks' house, she said, now, somebody told me when I came in, why don't you try 90 meetings in 90 days, and if you don't like it, your misery will be refunded. And I thought, you know, 90 meetings in 90 days, that's a little excessive. That's a meeting every day. I can do the math. But, you know, I was in a position to do it, and I didn't want to drink anymore, and I didn't want to die. And I went to those meetings, and I would leave those meetings, and I wanted to click my heels in the air. Because I felt there is something there. There is something here, and my life can only get better from this point. And it got better. Immediately, no more blackouts. Immediately, no more waking up feeling like dog poo. Immediately, no more hangovers. Not completely comfortable in my skin yet, but getting there. But the problem was, you know, I didn't drink, and I went to meetings. I got in this relationship at 3 weeks sober. Don't recommend that. So this whole that you guys get filled with a higher power and the steps and all that sort of thing, I got kind of filled with this person. I'd never been in love before, and so it was like, oh, this new thing. But I didn't drink, and I went to lots of meetings. They even let me like be the treasurer really early on there. I didn't steal money, but it made me feel, you know, I'm kind of writing these checks to GSO and figuring out stuff, so it was kind of a good thing. So anyways, this little relationship thing happened, and at 6 months into sobriety, this kid that's never been in love before gets, this person is unfaithful to me, and it was the most painful thing I'd ever felt in my entire flipping life. I'm just telling you. But I didn't have what it took to call it quits. And I stuck around for 2.5 years, and I didn't drink, and I went to meetings. But now I'm this jealous person and stuff. And finally, I had the guts to leave, and I went to Nantucket. I just couldn't stay in town, in this town anymore. I went over there, and I drove the UPS truck on Nantucket, and they were talking about the steps there. I'm pretty sure they were talking about the steps in Central Florida, but anyway. All of a sudden, I was starting to kind of listen, and you know, what I realized is that I did not have this experience. When this thing ended, this relationship ended, I had not developed, not worked the steps, except Sammy's little way without a sponsor handy. The first step was an autobiography. And so forth. So finally, I was pretty miserable on Nantucket. I had some fun times, but I was also pretty miserable. And I found somebody that had worked the steps, and I barely graduated from high school. If I would have failed one more class, I would not have graduated from high school. And I used to sit in class with a do not disturb sign on my head. You know, a little do not disturb, and I would be like, you know, like this on the thing. And I would not be in class. I was one of those kids that they're like, this girl's not going to graduate, so we need to get her some skills. So I would get to leave school early to work as a secretary at some place. So around 5 years sober, I found this thing when I was on Nantucket that looked kind of interesting, and I sort of heard about some school in Daytona Beach, and I sort of told my folks about it. And All you have to say is something ever so slightly relating to education to my folks, and they're all over it. And anyways, well, God dang it, if I didn't go to this school, and me, who should have failed high school, ended up, like, one little day at a time, and making A's. And, you know, going in the bathroom, it was a mostly all-guy school, so the bathrooms, my girls' bathrooms, I kind of had to myself almost, and sometimes, you know, I would just go in there and pray to help me with whatever I was studying, and I got, like, a four-year degree. So, you know, beyond your wildest dreams. I was able to, you know, my folks have, dad's gone to the big meeting in the sky, and my mom hit the road in January, as we say. And I was able to be there for them at the end of that whole deal. And my mom had Alzheimer's, and she died like January something. And it was a long road. It was, you know, a good 5 years or something, and we were able to keep her at home. And it was, you know, it was a tough deal when you all of a sudden you can't see or know how to write a check, and it just keeps going further, and, you know, we're dressing, and I got to, you know, I'm not really a caregiver type, but I got to do that. So we're hearing your comfort, character over comfort. And I was able to do all that stuff, and when she, you know, God just, like, let her go nice and easily at home, all of us, it was a wonderful thing for as far as dying goes. And, you know, that was a Thursday morning, and I happened to chair every other Thursday here, and she died at 6:30 in the morning, and, you know, that night I was able to, she was breathing kind of funny that night. And I just had a funny feeling, and she couldn't really converse at this stage in her Alzheimer's, but I just kind of told her the stuff I always do, like, you know, how much I loved her and what a good sport she's been through this whole ordeal. And I said, and if you want to hit the road, if you're tired and you just want to hit the road, it's okay. Dad will be there, and your folks will be there, and she was just kind of there. And the next morning, my sister called, and she had hit the road. And so we were all there, and so I was like, do I want to chair the meeting? But you're my people, and I had done what I needed to do. And so I came here and chaired the meeting, and, you know, it was very nice. But today, I do a lot of the stuff that I've been doing for a long time. I wake up in the morning, and I ask my higher power to help me stay away from a drink or a drug today. And ask if I can't help somebody else today, and there's books that, you know, I've got my 24-hour book that I had way back when, and my reflections book, and some other books, and that 24-hour book, my sister, after my dad passed away, gave me my dad's, so it's got, like, a place where the Labrador puppy chewed on it and stuff, but it's kind of, you know, it's got some neat things, and February 27th, it's got Cindy's birth, you know, Cindy's AA birthday, so that's kind of nice. When I end my day, you know, and I do this stuff on my knees. I would have never thought that I'd ever get on my knees, but it's just something that I do. I don't think my higher power cares if I'm on my knees or not, but it's just a humility thing that I do. So when I get out of bed, I slither out of bed and go straight to my knees and ask God for those things. I take a shower. I don't go to the computer yet or anything because I don't want to kind of get my mind anywhere else. And then I go to this wonderful window I have with an oak tree out there. And I, you know, and I, in many mornings I look out there and I just think, how the flip did this happen? How is it that I, you know, got this deal? I feel like it's sort of like Willy Wonka in the chocolate factory or something. You know, he gets the chocolate bar with the thing inside it. And we all got that chocolate bar with the ticket inside it. And we have 600 meetings a week in the Central Florida area. And that sounds like a lot of people, and it's a lot of people, but there's a whole lot more that aren't going to get the ticket. For whatever reason, they're not going to make it. So it's a nice gift. A nice gift. The gift of desperation gave me a really nice gift. I try to do the things we talk about. I try to make amends when I screw up. I try to, you know, decrease my defects of character. They're never going to go completely away, but they are a lot better than they were. I try to do service work. I'm so grateful for sponsorship, having a sponsor, and having sponsees. And, you know, I went through a rough time after my mom died. We had some family issues and stuff, and it was really a little rough. And, you know, I would have a sponsee call or something, and they did not know that they were helping little Cindy Lou Who, but they were. And I was just grateful to get out of myself. And so many God moments have happened in sobriety. I should have written them down when they happened. But one of them that I remember, because it wasn't that long ago, was, it was maybe April or something, and I was on the road, I was working. And I was in Burlington, Vermont, and this whole family stuff, it was very, very painful, and something I hadn't experienced before. And I'm in the hotel van getting a ride from the airport to the hotel with the guy I was working with, and I'm just, and it's kind of raining, and it's Burlington, which is normally nice, but it's kind of raining and cold, and I thought, I kind of would like to go to a meeting. I didn't think I was going to drink or anything, but there's times you just want to sit in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'll do that when I'm on the road sometimes, but sometimes it's a pain because you get in at 7:30 and you try to find a meeting and this and that. Then it was only 6 o'clock, but still it's raining. I'm going to have to find a cab and stuff. I don't know. I'll just go sit in my hotel room. And so I was in the line to check in. And I'm looking around, and there's all these kind of youngish sort of people there. And it's just kind of an eclectic crowd. And then I saw this sign, and it said something like ECAA something. And I'm thinking, it sort of looks like Icky Paw, but it's EC something, or E something, E, I don't know. And then I'm looking at the crowd a little more, thinking, looks like my people. And then these two girls were talking about a vision for you or something. And I'm like, I'm a friend of Bill's. I really need a meeting. And God brought me a meeting. So I went up and had a little catering that we'd gotten on the road, and I had my meal, and I went back down and I registered for this one little night that I was going to go to this one speaker's meeting. At these young people saying, people should go. I'm going to be traveling when this happens, but there's going to be one here. But it was so lively. I mean, they were all young. There was these mohawks and all sorts of stuff. And somebody would say, so I'm sitting down in this meeting waiting for the speaker, and these all these young people, somebody says, easy, easy, easy. And then all these other people go, pa, pa, pa. And it was like Icky Paw. And it's just something they do, and then they do it again. But it was very lively, and it was a very lesbian, and it was just, I'm home. And, you know, that's one of those things that happened that is God remaining, my higher power remaining anonymous. Lots more of those things have happened. And if you're new or coming back, stick around. It's a good deal. Ask for help. I waited way too long to get somebody to walk me through this thing, which is kind of the guidebook, you might say. The thing it does is gets you... You know, there, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, and like somebody else said, I got to do it. Like Liz said, it's a daily thing. If I dilly-dally and I rest on my laurels, then I am not spiritually fit. The resentments are going to build up, and who knows what might happen from there. So I got to keep plugging along. And thanks for letting me speak, and that's it.